The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show here on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 99.9 and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, folks, welcome to lunchtime. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. John DePietro, weekdays we start at 11, we go till 2. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM, always online at either DePietro.com, WNRI.com. You can get the free apps, free on your phone, TuneIn Radio app, Simple Radio app, or if you would just search WNRI, W News, Rhode Island. Or if you have Google or Alexa, just say Alexa, search WNRI, and I pop up in crystal clear audio. This portion of the program brought to you by JKL Engineering. Folks, the heating season is here. Let JKL design and install a natural gas, high-efficiency carrier infinity system. Energy efficient, quiet, more affordable than you think. No gas, no problem. Call JKL Engineering for over 52 years. JKL's reputation, second to none. Licensed in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Call JKL Engineering today. Estimates are free. Financing is available. 401-351-7600. Reduce your oil bill by as much as 90%. Highest rebates in the market. JKL. 401-351-7600. It's Monday. It is Political Monday. And let's bring him on. He's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. We say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. It's great to be on again.
Great, Justin. Let's start off, Justin. Boy, the news came down on Friday. And first of all, it's interesting. Channel 12 had broken the story that there was, in fact, a grand jury going on. And they had learned that Jeff Britt, the campaign aide operative, I should say, worker, working on the Mattiello campaign, that he had hired former U.S. Attorney Bob Correnti. And even then, it's amazing to me the people that just dismiss so much of this stuff, Justin, because even then I was hearing these people say, well, that's not going to go anywhere. It's probably then just going to fade. You're not going to hear anything about it. They had to, you know, just do that probably, get it off his desk. And then as I was mentioning, there was a story in the Boston Globe that Ed Fitzpatrick did that had, quote, legal experts. And they were saying, well, you know, it sounds like campaign misdemeanor, sounds like campaign finance. And all of a sudden, boom, Friday, Nirona. Boy, he arrived in big fashion. Press conference, never saw that with Kilmartin. We haven't seen an attorney general do something like that in a very long time. When Patrick Lynch was attorney general for 8 years, not one time did he have a press conference regarding anything with political corruption. Certainly Kilmartin did not. So this is the first time in a very long time. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this Nirona press conference and the fact that they've indicted now this Jeff Britt and his dealings with the Mattiello campaign.
Well, it certainly sends a message. As you just noted, the idea that we're now out of the world of campaign finance as the only crime that's ever broken when there's a campaign finance issue, I think that's a big deal. It's a reminder that there are actual crimes behind these things, and some of those carry pretty stiff penalties. I think Britt maybe may face up to 20 years in prison. Now, I imagine that's unlikely given the amount of the money and all of the other considerations. But when that's hanging out over there, it's no wonder he goes out and gets a pretty big name attorney to represent him. And I think the other important point here is the importance this shows of having political competition. I mean, this race came down to 85 votes. So it really, I mean, even though it's a small thing, it's a mailer, a couple thousand dollars in the grand scheme of things, it does make a difference. And I think that's an important thing to note is the reason we have this and the reason this is coming down and the, sort of the corruption of the system is coming on display here is that there was a challenger, Steve Frias, who had a competitive race. And then there are also people out there, in say, especially the Rhode Island Republican Party, to push the issue, press it with the Board of Elections and move things forward so that it can't just be laughed off as, oh, you know, haha, it's just a little indiscretion on the part of campaign finance. I mean, let's remember the Mattiello campaign got off pretty light, spending $76,000 out of a PAC account, what it shouldn't have. And that was kind of a brushed off the table. But we're getting into the world of real possible consequences when people break the rules. And I think that's a really good thing.
You're exactly right. And that was the fact that, you know, you remember it was 3 years ago. It didn't make sense at the time. Brandon Bell immediately started to go after that. And what I think is also significant here is what type of individual do we really have as a speaker right now? He, at the time, he had agreed to do a debate with Steve Fires on Newsmakers. In that debate on Channel 12, he said that he talked to his team and they didn't know anything about this. Now we obviously find out that that's not the case. He's been in hiding trying to work on his talking points. I understand that now he's going to emerge and do an interview tomorrow where he's start to say that if this was going on, he just didn't know about it. I could see a scenario where as they're talking about it, he's saying, I don't want to know anything about this. But he does, in fact, know about it. But, Justin, it also comes back to Steve Frierson rightfully said, you know, that mailer, that 85 votes, they basically tampered with. I think they stole an election. I mean, Frias won that outright. It was then after all these, quote, mail ballots that he won by 85 votes. Now, we don't know if when Britt says he's not going to be the fall guy, if he could shed some light on what happened with that. But this is the most powerful person in the state who's now, again, this is like when Gordon Fox had to go into hiding. Now he's like kind of in hiding. He's going to pick his words. He's got his spokesperson. Justin, how does anyone think that any type of real business is going to get done for the state when you have this type of leadership? You know, you have people like the mayor of Fall River, you have people like Governor Charlie Baker, and then you have a House Speaker who has to go into hiding when this stuff happens because he has to then try to get his talking points together, wait till the dust settles, see what his lawyer says, see what they have. And then now he'll emerge, like, with his story of that. Again, it's like a Sergeant Schultz, that he just didn't know that anything like this was going on.
Right. Well, it reminds me of the scene in the movie, The Breakup, where the friend is saying, oh, yeah, don't worry, nothing will happen to your girlfriend's new boyfriend. You know, that, and wink, wink, nod, nod. And it's hard to tell who's telling the truth there. I think that's kind of what we're looking at here. I believe that Mattiello didn't necessarily know anything specific about how this was going down, but as Dan McGowan reports in the Boston Globe, when you hire Jeff Britt, I mean, how did Dan put it? He put it as he's a guy with a reputation that he's willing to blur ethical lines to help his candidate.
Yes,
you go into it knowing you're hiring somebody like that. I liked also in that article, Mark Binder, who ran against Gordon Fox as a progressive in Providence, said, you know, I knew what I was getting into. I was using him. He was using me. I mean, there's no disguise of who you're hiring when you hire Jeff Britt. So it's entirely plausible that the whole thing could go down exactly as described. All you have to do is give Britt a little bit of access to your donor list and point him in a particular direction and then say, let's just make it happen. And so it is plausible. And it may, when it comes to court, it may end up being there's no ultimate connection that goes that last mile to pull in the speaker. But again, Jeff Britt has made it clear through his lawyer, Bob Crenti, that he's not going down. He's not going to just be the fall guy. Now, he may be positioning in the way things shake out in Rhode Island, he may be positioning that he gets a kind of a slap on the wrist kind of sentence. And so by being kind of aggressive right now, he's letting the powers who be know that maybe they want to deal with him. But hopefully that's not the case. And what we get is a real eye-opener of how these campaigns are actually done when they're competitive, which isn't often. So maybe what it comes down to is our politicians are not as skilled as they once were at hiding all this stuff because they don't have to actually run for their seats anymore. But that's a different issue.
I think you're right. And I think also you kind of have to wait. We have to wait to see where this is going to play out. He's going to be arraigned in court next Friday. And then who knows? I mean, a lot of times these things are, you know, delay. But what stands out to me, Justin Katz, is I just don't believe that Peter Nerona, to me, he by having that very visible press conference that caught everybody off guard, he's putting a lot on the line. And I just don't believe he's I think he understands what's at stake, meaning the Attorney General, Peter Noronha. I think people should also somewhat be encouraged, because we, you and I both know if this was Kilmartin, there's no way any of this stuff is going down. But Noronha's got a lot to lose here. If this thing fades or just disappears, you know, he certainly has the media's attention. This is not just a blip. Everybody's vested. I think it's going to hurt him politically if he's able to start to build a case. Because I believe, this is my opinion in talking to people, I believe the ultimate target is Mattiello. I think they know that Mattiello knew what was going on. The way to do it is you got to get people talking. Right now, no one's talking. They weren't talking. People just weren't complying. They wouldn't answer any type of questions. The way you have to start to do it is like any investigation. You have to start to move up the chain, move up the ladder, as they say. And then you start to maybe find that some people may want to rethink some of the answers that they gave. So these things don't happen overnight. But I think Mattiello, this is just me, I think he has met his match in Noronha. Noronha's a very skilled guy. Peter was U.S. attorney. I think, you know, also, Justin, you also have that grand jury that's going on right now regarding that doctor on Park Avenue, where they're trying to get his records and his records with the state regarding this was someone Mattiello and Montanaro wanted to give $1 million to. It just strikes me that with Mattiello, then you know you have the aides involved. It's like every time you turn around, this guy is somehow involved with something really questionable.
Oh, certainly. And the thing with the Noronha is, if you observe Rhode Island politics, our politicians have left a whole lot of low-hanging fruit for kind of good government and candidates with integrity. And so I think there's a lot more upside to Noronha if he's going to continue in any kind of political career to be the guy who's going to push on these things. Now there has been some talk of, it sounds a little bit like he's taken, you know, he said there are no other indictments anticipated. That could just be talk. Some people are speculating this might actually be a relief to the Mattiello camp, because now they know Britt has not turned state's evidence, as it were. We'll have to see on that. And I will say it is kind of surprising to read some of the accounts and not see anybody else actually facing any charges at all. I mean, the way it sounds, money was being handed to people, recycled to another check, both to the donors, then to the Lawton, to Shauna Lawton, where literally checks are being exchanged to hide the money. And it's interesting that only Britt has been indicted on this. That could mean the others have been cooperating, and that got them off the hook. But we've been burned a lot in Rhode Island by people in public office. So it's going to take a bit more for Noronha to, I think, all the trust he needs to really be capture that image as the white knight in Rhode Island. But I think he's certainly on his way and taking the right steps. And that ought to make the corrupt politicians in the state pretty nervous if they see somebody who's planning to capitalize as a political strategy on the corruption in Rhode Island by actually stopping it rather than joining it.
Here's one last word I have on this, and this comes from some people that I was speaking to over the weekend. This person framed it to me that the problem for Britt and the problem he's going to face is there are some individuals, let's just say we take them at their word, that there's almost like an accounting error, right? There are some political consultants that are out there. And let's just say that there was somehow like a mishap or accounting error. And then if you start to dig into some other things surrounding them, everything else would, in fact, all kind of shake out and be in line. Everything would be up to speed. What's been described to me is this guy, even his own admission, right, blurs the lines. He operates a certain way. The way it was described to me was the problem for Britt is every time you start to turn over a rock, there's more and more there. They don't like do everything right and everything by the books except for this. You start to look into this guy, some of his dealings, some of his bank statements, some of these other things, it starts to lead to a trail that he could be in a lot more trouble than just initially. Remember, a lot of these things, it always starts off sometimes small, and then it can grow and larger and larger. And, you know, I even look at Michael Cohen is in prison right now. That started off as supposedly he was just the fixer for the president regarding that Stormy Daniels situation, and then they started to You know, once they start looking at the tax returns, once they start looking at the bank statements, once they start questioning reports that were handed in, then they start to realize he had that whole scam go with the medallions in New York City. And now Michael Cohen finds himself in prison. It started like a kind of a small thing that maybe he was the guy behind the Stormy Daniels thing. So moving on, unless, Justin, do you have another last thought on that? Or
no, that sounds about right. The other thing, though, to remember is that could also, whatever they find on in Britt's accounts or whatever, as you just suggested might be the case, that's another opportunity for somebody else to have known it was going on.
So that's
even,
right.
Even if, say, Speaker Mattiello, or even any of the other politicians whom Britt has worked with, even if Mattiello didn't know about this particular one, there could be some other item that's unearthed by strange bank account transactions or whatever, and that's one that they won't be able, you know, you can almost picture at the table going, oh, I don't want to know about this, but somebody else heard them say that, and then you start to build the bigger case. Those things, I suspect, are always out there floating around, but it does take the initial opposition and the initial challenge and the initial indictment to start getting that all rolling.
That's right. Folks, good afternoon. It's Sean DePietro. Speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Our segment is Political Monday. Justin, I want to also get into last week. You have Governor Raimondo. She's not just the governor of Rhode Island, as you know. She's the chair of the National Democrat Governors Association. And boy, what a distinction Governor Gina Raimondo has. Of all the different governors, 50 different governors or 49 around the country, Governor Gina Raimondo, the least popular governor at 36% approval rating and 56% disapproval rating. And Justin Katz, this comes less than a year after she supposedly was reelected with a mandate majority of 52% of the vote. She, you know, well, that stuff doesn't bother me, blah, blah, blah. You think of all the efforts they go to with PR people, staff people, trying to arrange all these interviews. New York Times, you know, she's my type of Democrat, flying out to Chicago for the podcast, trying to make the rounds, all this stuff. And to me, this is someone that it's just those numbers can't be ignored.
Yeah, of course they can. And it's interesting to phrase it. You know, this is the chair of the Democrat Governors Association as the least popular governor in the country. How does that shake out? How do you get to where that's your front person there and running your organization? It does look bad, and it looks bad. The last election, she tried and didn't get much traction, saying, well, this is now, you know, I won this one. There are no doubts about, you know, too many people in a race. This was a convincing win. And not really. It makes me think of the numbers for, say, unemployment. You know, we have Daryl West from Brookings Institution noted that we have low unemployment, which makes this strange for her to be so unpopular in the state. But in Rhode Island, if you live in Rhode Island, you know the unemployment numbers don't reflect our lived reality in the Ocean State. And I think there's something very similar with the political numbers. You know, the election results don't reflect the lived reality in the Ocean State. There's too much going on with mail ballots, too much going on with all of that. So I believe the Morning Consult poll. And I think it's also interesting that worth noting in that poll that Rhode Island had the lowest number of people who said they didn't have an opinion about the governor. And that's well within the margin for who's last and who's, you know, third to last on approval or disapproval. So Rhode Islanders really, according to this poll, really know what they think about the governor, and it isn't good. And that's not a good sign for her.
No.
And it is peculiar. Even it should, if things work as they're supposed to in a political system, it should follow her even as she tries to make headway into the national politics, as we've all been speculating she's been doing probably since early on in her first term.
It also jumps out. That is an excellent point about the least number of people that have an opinion about Governor Raimondo, Justin Katz. But what also just jumps out at me, number one, it's obviously so glaring because right next door is Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, who has the highest approval rating. But you come back to, and you said something that's interesting about her being the head of the National Democrat Governor Association. Her goal, and her people were saying, and people around her, she wanted to get a majority. She wanted to get 52%. As soon as they got that, her people jumped into action and were making the case that she, in fact, should be the chairperson for the National Democrat Governors Association. I also circle back, and you and I have covered this. The clock is ticking. Unfortunately, we're now, here we are, at the end of October. The Providence Journal, you know, today's Monday, October 21st. The Providence Journal put in, and it right now is sitting somewhere, where they're trying to take Nellie Gorbea to court, the Secretary of State, to try to get access to that voter roll information. I think even regardless of that, Gorbea and the Secretary of State, they'll probably kick it and delay it and try to get an appeal and all this other stuff. Justin, I come back to, it was described to me that Raimondo had 60,000 mail ballots a year ago, less than a year ago, last November. And then when you look at, she was able to get close to 200,000 votes. But I agree with you. The numbers just don't match up. Her approval rating in less than a year at 36% when supposedly she got 52% of the vote. I think it calls into question those 60,000 mail ballots in the election in general, because I know her talking point, you know, she did that interview with Joe Paolino. She's like, well, you know, I think people are just saying maybe that's not the most popular person, but I love the job she's doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Justin, I don't hear anyone say that. I don't think people feel that way. I think her approval rating and what really should have been the vote total is closer to 36-38%. Maybe there was some of this anti-Trump that Fung ran into, but if you take 200,000 minus 60,000, which is the number of mail ballots that they harvest out in the field, going door to door, getting mail ballots, da da da, hey, you can't do it, write it in, sign here, put your X here, whatever. If you back that out, that falls closer to what Mayor Fung received, which was he received close to 38-40% of the vote. I think that's closer to, in reality, of where she is. They just, as you and I both know, they just spent a ton of money on the ground game and the get out the vote. And I think, again, though, that answer lies in these mail ballots that we still don't have the information on.
Well, a lot of it does. And I think one point to make on this is when you look at the popularity of the governor, you ask, what has she been doing? And the only thing I can think of in the past at least 6 months is trying to get an IGT contract over the threshold for people.
That's right.
She's got political connections. So there's no reason to think she's popular. She's not doing anything that has people out there saying, yes, thank you for doing this or that or the other thing. In fact, she's been very separate from some of the areas of things that might do something like that, say fixing Providence schools. That would be a big deal. She's not very visible in that. And so there's no reason to think she's been able to build up all the support. And at the same time, I would go past the mail ballot. So much of, I mean, there are two ways to win an election. You win over a lot of people, a majority of the people who are going to vote, or you get the people who are going to support you out to vote. And mail ballots are part of that, but there's so much else to it. It's also deals with unions, deals with activist organizations, all of that kind of thing to motivate your side, while at the same time making the other side feel like they've got nothing. You go after your opponents, but also you go after their sense that they're going to have anything that'll make their vote make a difference. So I think that we've got the mail ballots are sort of the tip of the spear of a very unhealthy electoral system in Rhode Island, which winds up, and that's after multiple elections that were arguably decided because it was weird multiple candidates, not just the binary choice. And so after a number of years of that, people start to get discouraged. And I think we're looking at a situation here where they've so bastardized our electoral system with all the questionable activities, the campaign finance stuff, the special deals, even down to the check that they get through the legislative grant process, and that's on the front page of your newspaper, and everybody sees the whole thing is just corrupt, not working. I think that's where we are now, and that's it's unhealthy. And mail ballots are kind of like the final point that just shows you this is how it goes, where you can get a governor who does not have the support of a majority and, in fact, has the most disapproval in the country, and yet that's her big shining moment to win a majority of the vote. That I think that's an indication that we really need to do some soul searching on how we do politics in the Ocean State.
You know, you're exactly right. And not only that, Justin, just a final, you know, note on this is when you think about it. So a year ago, she received 52% of the vote. And granted, you know, then we found out, you're right, she did make a deal with the unions to promise them the evergreen legislation. She did make a promise with the progressives to get the extreme abortion law passed, that she'd be supporting that behind the scenes. But even still, let's just say that there was 52% of the vote. And then her approval rating right now is 36%. Basically, within the margin of error, 20-point drop from or close to it of what she, you know, would have received for the vote total to what her approval rating is right now, 56% disapproval, highest of any governor in the country. In the past 9 months, 10 months, there's been no major controversy within her administration that would cause that type of drop. I was speaking with a political consultant last week that said, you know, normally, if you see that type of drop, it's associated with some kind of a major scandal, such as, and she laid out, she mentioned the example, because she does live out of state, but she was mentioning the example of, like, Anthony Weiner, that he was the congressperson, Weiner, what have you, that when that came out, literally in a short amount of time, you saw his poll numbers drop dramatically. This is someone out of state saying it's very, you know, unusual, if not impossible. What would account for Mundo's point level to be able to drop close to 20 points in 9 months when you write about IGT and you write about some of the other dealings? But I just don't believe it was 52% to begin with. I really don't. And I think if we could ever get our hands on the voter roll information, and maybe now with the new attorney general, we will. I think it will bear out that this is my opinion. I do not believe the vote total last November were legitimate vote totals for that election. I just don't. And maybe they can try to say that they did everything ethical and within the rules or the bounds of the law. But I come back to, it is the people that are being registered to vote, that it's impossible to verify it. No one's ever charged with it. I think the way the Board of Elections has operated, that a lot of the people at the State House feel you can just get away with anything, and so the rules go by the wayside.
I think that's right. But I do think it's worth emphasizing that if you look at the actual poll numbers, and especially these morning consults, which I think come out every 6 months or so, there was no, or at least I don't remember there being a spike in Raimondo's approval during that.
None.
So there is actually no change in opinions about her. It's just that the actual election results don't match any of the polling data we've ever seen on the governor. It does raise questions about how that could possibly be so out of step. And I think that bears a lot more research and investigation.
But you would agree, until we can get, or anyone could get, the hands on that type of information, it's just impossible to determine that.
Oh yeah, you need at the very minimum, you need the birthdays restored so you can tell who's who on the voter rolls. But there's a lot more information needs to be understood, and some of that probably would take investigation of people who can get more access, who can actually get their hands on forms that are filled out in order to get mail ballots or in order to register to vote. All of those sorts of things, it can be very, very difficult to get. I know Monique Chartier, from the Ocean State Current, had tried for years to get information about what identification people were using in order to register to vote. And a long, long time of just having to fight, call people, and finally got information. And there were a lot of them, I don't remember the number, but a lot of them, I think the code was 666, which meant some other arbitrary form of identification to register. So somebody needs to be able to do a full investigation. It would have to be somebody with the authority to go in, dig into those forms, actually look at them, and start to compare IDs and see. But it's almost impossible to imagine that happening, because as soon as you start talking about election reform or anything like that, you get the Secretary of State, the Board of Elections, all of them coming out and saying, oh, you're actually accusing people, as Ken Block has been accused, accusing them of trying to undermine confidence in the electoral system because you want some explanation of these items. They circle wagons and say there's no evidence at all of voter fraud. And that's, I don't know, there are two ways you have no evidence. Either there's nothing going on, or everybody involved is just has an interest in keeping it quiet and not having evidence emerge. And I'm not confident that it's the first and not the second.
Yeah, and on top of that, they don't look for it either. So when they say there's no evidence of voter fraud, they don't look for any voter fraud. So of course you're not going to find it. One thing I want to just mention to you before I let you go, before we move on to the next topic, and that is, you know, I just pulled up. So in the last election, last November, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker got 66% of the vote, and his approval rating is 73%. Raimondo, so his vote total was actually even a little below what his approval rating is, slightly below, 66%, 66.7, say make it 67, but his approval rating is 73%. Raimondo, her approval rating is 36%. Her vote total was 52%. I mean, it's not even close. And if anything, her vote total was way above what her approval is, where Baker's vote total was below what his approval rating is. How do you explain that, Justin?
Well, you can. You can kind of explain how Governor Baker would be in his position where the vote total is lower because
slightly, though, slightly, yeah,
yeah. But what will happen is the people who will oppose him, especially somebody who's Republican in a Democrat state, the people who oppose him are going to be more likely to vote. So you'll get that alone could probably explain that. Whereas the governor in Rhode Island, Governor Raimondo, it's the opposite dynamic. That certainly helps her, which kind of shows that the approval must be really bad in order to get that kind of a gap.
That type of gap. And again, just to frame this, but Baker, 67% vote total. His approval rating is 73. So you're looking at really almost a margin of error, 6 points. 6 point difference from approval to vote total. Raimondo, 36% approval, supposedly got 52% of the vote. I just, you know what, Justin? On this day, I am telling you, I don't believe that. I don't think it doesn't make sense. There's something off about that. We don't have the data and information. We can go through it. But much like there are so many different times when something happens and it doesn't seem right. It doesn't sound right. Your instinct, and then people try to nope. That's just, and then, you know, and it goes back to like that Shauna Lawton Mailer. It didn't make sense. It didn't seem right. Brandon Bell was like, there's no way. Where did she come up with the 2000? And then we found out that it wasn't. There is something off about that election that she got. And then because now, would she be elected chair of the National Democrat Governor Association if she got 36% of the vote? No, the answer is no. She became the chair, as I had said, because she got the majority. I do want to move on just a couple other topics. Do you want to touch on, you know, again, I go back to the Mattiello first says he didn't know that one of his top aides is involved with cannabis legislation and trying to get into the cannabis business. Boy, this is another problem when you have corruption, because you can't then put out a memo saying, all right, from now on, no one should be involved with anything like that. But the fact that GOP questions role of Mattiello staffer in cannabis laws, it is just unending. It is like a feeding frenzy up there, Justin Katz, with these guys and his crew. This is this Grant Pilkington. That they feel that the fact that they're shaping legislation involved with that, as Mattiello's deputy chief of staff, shouldn't stop them from somehow getting involved with this type of stuff. To me, their moral compass of right and wrong is beyond repair.
No, they're always looking for an angle, and that's one of the suspicions you had to have about legalizing marijuana and related products from the beginning. Was this is a big market for government to essentially displace the black market, or the, used to be the mob, but just the drug dealers, whatever the form they may take. It just opens up this opportunity. It gives government a pretense for constraining the number of people who can do it, which gives them more leverage. It's just like in Fall River, where the mayor was accused of basically extorting money from people who wanted to open marijuana stores, where because it came down to him to be able to approve your license or not. And that's very similar kind of stuff, although more elegantly done, through our legislature. And I mean, it's not just the Pilkington and this their company, American Standard Hemp. It was him, Matthew Jerzyk, attorney, who's in with the Mattiello crew, and a state health lobbyist, Will Farrell. This is how it's set up, and that's a real concern that government is working in this way. They come up with the legislation. In this case, they've even gone so far as to raise questions about separation of powers, where this is not a legislative power. Although I tend to doubt it makes much difference whether you let the regulators be the gatekeepers. It seems more like where the opportunity for the corruption lies. But this is not a close call, and it's so obvious that the word is they're going to, in the first month of being in session, when almost nothing ever happens, they're going to clean this up so that it doesn't look quite so obvious going forward that what they're doing is constraining the supply of a formerly illegal product in order to pick and choose who gets to make the fortune off of its legality.
Folks, again, good afternoon. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, a couple more topics. Last week, the protesters, the Wide Detention Center, they're still at it. This time they take their little roadshow to the State House, and as they're about to make a big proclamation, or they're trying to scream up and down, Governor Mundo comes marching out, least popular governor in the country, and says, "I'm with you, no more private prisons in Rhode Island." What's your thought on that?
Well, we're certainly going to see her popularity soar after that, right? I mean, that's a big thing that people are clamoring for. Once again, led by Aaron Regenberg, who at this point is supposed to be in law school, which I had heard was difficult, but apparently not if you can spend a night at the State House in Rhode Island rather than up, you know, studying in Boston. The idea that this is, this is a nationwide push, and their big success is getting the progressive governor of Rhode Island to, quote, cave to their demands. I think they're not going very far with any of it. But it is. It's just a show. And it is kind of tedious that the governor would be even catering to that sort of thing, especially the idea of constraining who can run prisons. And, it's kind of embarrassing that this is an issue in Rhode Island.
What do you make of her talk about pandering coming out on something like that? I mean, instead of putting these protesters, of all the things to be worried about, this isn't one of them. This all goes back to this whole opposition of ICE and the way they're being detained, and they put out these myths and lies. People aren't being fed. People aren't allowed to see attorneys. People aren't allowed to see doctors. These are people that are in the country illegally that are being detained before they're going to be deported. Most of them have, most if not all, I believe 95% of them have committed crimes. Many of them have committed crimes in the countries they're being deported back to. And boy, you'd never know that from Ruggenberg and the, you know, ever ready protesters he has with him.
Oh no, you wouldn't. And the question I have is what they have against private prisons and how that gets mixed up in all that. I guess if it's not a private prison, one, they've got more influence through the government labor unions. Maybe they have more influence to control how government prisons operate. But this idea, I mean, they're also going after pretty much any private organizations that work with government on these issues, and they want to ban cities and towns from being able to cooperate with the federal government. It just comes down to a power play of top-down government in order to protect, as you say, people who are entering the country illegally. And in some ways, it feels like it comes right back to our conversation about how you get at disproportionate voter totals for certain politicians. Makes you wonder if that's where a lot of this is going.
Folks, we're going to, speaking with Justin Katz, this portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by Tremendous Detail. Remember, for tremendous results, bring your vehicle to Tremendous Detail. 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Call them at 508-479-5400, New England's premier detailing facility, and it's beautiful and fantastic. It's Tremendous Detail. Call them 508-479-5400 or online at tremendousdetail.com. And Justin, our final story today, you know, I really admire the work that Ken Block does. It is you know, to me, reeks of almost third world banana republic type antics that people like Ken Block and some others have to deal with. But the story of he had to go now to authorities. He had a situation in Warwick. He brought it to the attention of various individuals. In fact, that they were of what the retaliation regarding him. Rooting out some of the corruption involving overtime with the fire department. That leads to them showing up at his place of business, trying to make a statement, intimidate him. And then even the mayor comes over, and then he sends over someone from the tax office. And so former candidate Ken Block has now filed complaints with state federal authorities, investigation, series of retaliation by the city's fire marshal and the mayor, by the tax assessor. You know, Justin, it's 2019, and the city of Warwick certainly could use more businesses moving there. The city of Warwick has problems with the tax base. The schools are horrific. You know, you had the people of MetLife pulling out and several years ago, and they just continue to lose businesses. And someone brings, you know, doing good government work, brings the attention of authorities of overtime abuse and everything else, and it's this type of intimidation that I find it's so destructive, Justin Katz, because they use this opportunity to make an example of someone, so someone else who's thinking of speaking out, they want them to be silent.
Well, yeah, I think so, but what strikes me, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, is Ken's experience here is probably not all that unusual. It's just most people don't want to get involved. They say, you know what, I'll just deal with it. I'll pay the fine, pay the whatever, move the fire alarm, whatever, and I'll stop talking because I just want to do business. I want to be able to make money and do what I want to do for a living. So it's so important to find people like Ken Block out there who will say, you know what, this was outrageous and I'm going to keep pursuing it. And I think it's an important lesson for government, sort of just like Nirona going after the campaign finance related stuff. There has to be that consequence. You have to know when you're going to shake down or intimidate local business. Every now and then you're going to hit somebody who's going to make a big deal out of it. I think that's very important work. And I think it can't stop with just the complaint, because as you read the history of the whole thing, so you get Ken was working with Rob Cody in Warwick mainly on firefighter sick time and arrangements there. That unearthed all these side deals that Mayor Advedesian had made with the fire department. So now this fire marshal who did the surprise inspection, he's since retired. Advedesian, he's since moved on to Rhode Island, RIPTA. That's kind of how it goes, right? They when they do these things and somebody stands up, they all just gracefully retire or move on to another office, and the current Mayor Solomon says, oh, well, we've put an end to that. It's not happening anymore. But meanwhile, you've been intimidating people. And meanwhile, you've been taking money or arranging, using taxpayer dollars in ways there was no authority to use it in the sick time scandal. So I hope Ken continues to push this, and I hope he gets some traction with it. He's brought it to state and federal authorities, so we'll see where it goes with that. But there have to be consequences for all of these things, for both the side deals and for creating Rhode Island as a place where people kind of expect it. And you get this all the time in good government work, is I don't want to come forward. I don't want to get involved. I don't want to put my name on that or donate to this organization or do that, because then they'll come after me. And it's such low-grade petty stuff, like a surprise inspection for fire alarms, but it can rattle people, and they just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, you know, I watched it happen in East Greenwich. As much as, you know, what some people don't realize is you had a Republican town council and they were trying to rein in spending, and the tax base and the taxes, the way they're going up, are just completely out of hand. And so as they started to uncover some of the abuses within the union and the fire department, what did they start doing? They start showing up at meetings, and they're disruptive, and they're following these council people who figured, yeah, I'll get involved with the council and town council. I want to be actively involved. And, you know, following them to their cars, following them to their homes, protesting out in front of their houses. And then what happens? The election time comes around and no one wants to run for the seat. So sometimes the strategy is not even sometimes just to try to win, you know, the battle. It's to send a message and try to get anybody that wants to think about running, make them think twice, think them think long and hard about getting involved. Because, as you said, most people would say, you know, I have no intentions of this. I remember several years ago, this woman told me that her husband retired and said, you know what, I've always wanted to kind of get involved in the community. So he got involved with, I believe it was a school committee in Coventry. I believe it was Coventry. So he gets there, and he starts questioning some of the raises and the contract and where some of the money is going. And you know, the next meeting, these people show up, and they start questioning him and going after him. And then they followed him to his car, and then they were in front of the house later. And then they're coming back more, and then the things are being posted online about him and the family, and you know, a number of them showing up and kind of, you know, doing the gauntlet as he's trying to go in and out. And she said, you know, here was a guy who was successful in business, thought, yeah, I want to pay back, I want to be a good citizen, I want to get involved in the process, I've always thought about running for office, I'm now retired, I can do it. And then they felt like, what have we gotten involved in, where it was just, you know, little stuff, vandalism to the house, stuff on the lawn, cars late at night in their driveway, honking loud. Again, not being, you know, nothing at gunpoint, but just enough that would wake them up, people calling, mail to the house, you know, calling names, vicious, vile mail, things left in the mailbox. After a while, he was like, it's just not worth it. I thought I was going to get involved to do the right thing, but I just don't need to deal with this.
Right. Well, what they do is they raise the cost of it, of getting involved, to the point that only people who really are dedicated warriors will actually make a go of it. And that's probably, if there's anything that can be fixed in our political system from a reform point of view, is getting enough people in there and finding ways to stop that kind of intimidation. I think that's so critical, probably more so than any of the campaign finance or other laws. We need to find a way to allow people to just get into government, to do community service, and make intelligent decisions based on what they find without having to worry about the intimidation.
Folks, he's the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. He's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you, John. I look forward to it.
All right.